What's up, .NET members and non-members alike, since this is an all-access audio. This is Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett coming at you for the SummerSlam audio review. And before we get started properly, I want to take some time and plug some features on ProWrestling.net. First of all, right now, we've got a membership sale going on. For $5, you can get access to the site. It's about a third off of what we usually charge monthly, so it's a great time to check it out. And with that access comes exclusive interviews with Tough Enough contestant Michelle Dighton, Tough Enough contestant Jeremiah Riggs. Who else do we got, Jake? It's Shane Helms just did an exclusive interview with Jason Powell. I mean, and then there's the classics with a former TNA creative team member Dutch Mantel, former WWE creative team member Court Bauer, a few interviews with both of them talking about current issues and their times in their respective companies alike. I mean, there's a crazy amount of audio. And on top of that, you get access to member first look news and just our regular slate of audio, which includes the .NET countdown that Jake and I do every week, talking about the best and worst of the week, and .NET Weekly, the flagship audio of ProWrestling.net, where Jason Powell and Chris Shore talk about the news of the week, and nine times out of ten, break news that you're not going to see, read, or hear about anywhere else in that audio.
Yeah, man, on top of that, members get all the first-run news that takes, you know, anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of weeks to make it onto the free site. So it's a pretty good value for what you're getting, considering all the audio, pay-per-view, and TV live coverage, editorial content, plus all that first-run exclusive news.
Yeah, basically, we do a lot for the members. And, you know, right now you can lock in that $5 a month rate by taking the yearly sell, by taking the annual option, if you know you're going to like the .NET membership. And if you've been hesitant and want to try it out, this is the perfect time to try it out, guys. So we strongly recommend that you check that out. It's fun, too. You get to be part of the .NET Members Forum, which always heats up around Tuesday night NXT time. I know it sounds crazy, but that's the best time to be in the forum. All right. So I pimped the .NET member site, at least enough for right now. You'll probably get more of that later. But let's talk about SummerSlam. And I was in the arena, so I'm obviously going to have a different perspective than Jake. And, I mean, I guess we should start with the biggest story, and that's Alberto Del Rio is now WWE champion. But the way he got there, I don't think anyone could have predicted. Kevin Nash ran in after CM Punk had defeated John Cena, powerbombed CM Punk, and then Alberto came out and cashed in. I mean, Jake, what were you thinking as you sat at home and watched this?
I was flabbergasted by the whole Kevin Nash thing. I mean, my first response was to go, why now? But I kind of knew that we were going to get some kind of, you know, family or friend involvement in this match. We had, you know, Stephanie back on the show. You know, you probably saw the vignettes in the arena. We saw them on television with her, you know, paying visits to both CM Punk and John Cena, you know, and then the final one with Triple H. Triple H, you know, whether he's playing the patsy or not, had that look of shock on his face with what had transpired after the match. You know, I think the entire finish to this was probably just a way, you know, for somebody, whoever that is, to show Triple H that he is definitely not always in control. And I think that's a good step for the storyline, because on top of that, we have, you know, Rey Mysterio, CM Punk, John Cena, and Alberto Del Rio. You know, we have a new champion with Del Rio, but all three of those guys, besides him, have legitimate beefs about getting another shot at the WWE title. So there's definitely a lot of places to go storyline-wise from here. And, you know, while the gut reaction from a lot of people last night was not positive, I think there is a ton of places they can go, and I think we just have to let this story play out before we make any serious judgments on it. You know, my first reaction to Nash was, you know, well, this is kind of overbooked, but the more I thought about it, the more I actually kind of liked the idea of a power struggle for that that COO or whatever you want to call it spot, because, you know, Triple H's character hadn't changed that much leading into the show, and I think we need to see evolution in that storyline. And this, if this is the way they get there, I'm kind of glad that it's happening now.
Yeah, I mean, the Kevin Nash surprise just floored me. I'm sitting there, you know, standing at the end of the show, just, you know, great match from Cena and Punk. I have the commentary earpiece in, which I will cover a little bit later as we get into talking about the show in order. But I've got my commentary earpiece in, and I see someone hopping the guardrail, and, you know, it looks like someone who should be hopping the guardrail, not, you know, a over-passionate fan. And literally, the announcers just are going, Kevin Nash, what the hell? And I was like, Kevin Nash, what the hell? Powerbomb, Alberto Del Rio hits the comes out, hits a weak move, Sandy and Siguri, not a weak move, but, you know, not his finisher, and pins Punk. And, well, first of all, let me just say, the arena treated Del Rio pinning Punk like he was a babyface. I think because about half of the arena was for Cena and against Punk, you got then a babyface reaction from that half of the arena when Del Rio won. Plus, you know, some of the Punk supporters are also Del Rio supporters because they jumped on the Punk bandwagon because they cheer for heels. So it was just, it was interesting that Del Rio got a huge babyface pop. Plus, you know, you can say it was the Latino market and stuff being in L.A., but I think that didn't have as much to do with it. But, yeah, the title scene right now on Raw, where on SmackDown I feel like I'm having trouble coming up with the contender whose name isn't Christian. On Raw, Cena, Punk, Mysterio. I mean, you've got The Miz, who's down there in that picture as well, you know, who can move up to the title picture if you need him to. You've got, you know, really, and not that I want to see this now, but Triple H is on the brand. And if everyone gets hurt, Triple H stepping into the ring won't be that surprising. Plus, you've got Nash mixed in to feud with these guys. Again, Triple H is there to feud. I mean, the upper card on Raw right now, and I know the upper card on Raw usually looks stacked, but it looks stacked and logically able to handle many storylines all at once.
Yeah, and I think that's where this conclusion to the show really succeeded. There's always been that kind of beef that people have had with WWE storylines, especially in the main event on Raw, where, you know, the logical next step is always kind of nebulous and off in the distance. But I think when you have this many storyline potential, this much storyline potential out there, I think you can definitely move people in and out of that title picture with ease, and always have something else for them to do, you know, while they're kind of being shuffled around. And that's something that SmackDown definitely doesn't have the luxury of right now. So I was pleased the more time that I actually spent thinking about where this is going, and I'm kind of excited to see, you know, what we're going to see out of you know, this whole Kevin Nash bit. You know, who exactly brought him in? What's his motivation? Mm-hmm. You know, who is working behind the scenes to kind of discredit Triple H? You know, you have the possibility of it being Stephanie. You have the possibility of it being somebody working for Vince. You know, the thing could go in a lot of directions. And I think any time you have more questions than answers, you know, when you're talking about WWE storylines, the better off the show is going to do.
Exactly. And some people would say, you know, there's this argument out there that if TNA had done the exact same thing with Nash, you'd be complaining. And yeah, I would be if TNA did the exact same thing with Nash, because in TNA's main event, there's Kurt Angle and Sting, or Sting and Ric Flair. Or there's all of the, you know, there's these over-the-hill aging wrestlers. And it's in this WWE story, Nash is involved in a story with, yes, Triple H is there, but it's Del Rio, young guy. Cena, young guy, probably, you know, in the second half of his run on top, but who knows, because we said that about Hogan a lot, and then his heel turn revived everything. And Punk, a young guy, and a young guy that the fans are getting really into. So it is different because Nash is being brought in as you know, possibly a special enforcer type guy, a bodyguard type guy, or even if he's being brought in as a full-time wrestler, he's being brought in as the one veteran working with, you know, pretty much a younger group. He's not working with guys that he could have worked with in 1998. He's working with guys who weren't on the national scene in 1998, aside from Triple H. So it is very different what WWE is doing and what TNA is doing. And on top of that, booking-wise at least, WWE is hot right now. TNA is not. So WWE can get away with just a little bit more when they book because, you know, the fans are going to buy into it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how much of a good look you got at Nash, but, you know, the guy looked like he was in phenomenal shape. I mean, for his age, you know, he looked like he'd been working out, looked like he's got his diet right.
He ran.
So, yeah, exactly.
Nash,
I mean,
Nash never ran in TNA, and that's a lot shorter of a distance to run than any part of the Staples Center, and Nash ran and didn't tear a quad while doing it. So I'm going to say he's in good shape.
Yeah, it definitely appears to be. And I don't know if you caught this. I posted it to the forum in the Nash heading. But Nash has been kind of tweeting CM Punk on and off ever since that first initial promo. You know, kind of telling him that, you know, Punk, you know, that if you need some backup, you let me know. You know, you're the guy. I'd be willing to go back on the road full-time for stuff like that. So, you know, maybe this was, you know, they could go a lot of directions with this. But if they end up with Nash doing the enforcer role for Punk, I think that could work because, you know, Nash was excellent as the bodyguard for Shawn Michaels. So I think that's one direction they could go, and there's plenty of others. So a lot of possibilities here, and not many of them are bad. So I think the way this pay-per-view ended was a pretty spectacular way to close the show.
I think out of all the possibilities that I'm willing to consider, I don't see how Nash becomes Punk's bodyguard after tossing him the world title.
You know, you could just say he was trying to get his attention. You know, the world title is, it comes and goes for a lot of these guys. And I think storyline terms, I think they all have, plenty of reasons to get another shot at the world title. So, I mean, we've seen weird, you know, swerves like this in the past, but there's a lot of directions they could go, and I hope we're going to see, you know, Nash make more appearances, because if that was a one-off, I think it would have been kind of wasted, but we'll see.
That would just be awkward if it were a one-off. And today the WWE website is actually promoting or questioning who brought Kevin Nash in. So it does seem like he will be playing a hired gun role. But how about we do this thing from the top, and I'm just going to start from arriving at Staples Center last night, and there was a line around the building, and the fans seemed excited. I mean, I've been to SummerSlam for the last couple years, the last few years that it's been in L.A., and it's always fun, but L.A. crowds, they can be a little iffy, and this crowd actually seemed pumped. As the first thing I noticed, tons of CM Punk shirts. I mean, everywhere you looked, that CM Punk T-shirt, someone was wearing it. More, I would say, than the John Cena T-shirt. Now, the CM Punk shirt is very new. The Cena T-shirt's been out since WrestleMania, so it's possible that it's just, you know, there's a little more interest in a new shirt. But I thought that was pretty telling. I also thought it was telling that even before we got into the building, CM Punk chants were ringing out. I mean, this was a crowd that was pumped and really just pumped about one match, but still a very excitable crowd, which was a good thing because, like I said, L.A. crowds tend to suck sometimes. I mean, there's no other way to say it. Also, a quick side story. 2 years ago at SummerSlam when CM Punk main evented against Jeff Hardy, I looked everywhere for a CM Punk T-shirt. Everywhere. Every corner of the arena. I went to every merch stand. No one was selling them. I just think that's a little bit of a funny factoid considering last night they were everywhere. So, but yeah, got into the arena. The set looked just like the last couple of years have, except up above the big screen there was a round little screen next to it, and they were using a different color scheme with more of the big city feel than they have for the past SummerSlams, which have been more like yellow and reds and we're summer-ish. But then getting into the actual event, Dolph Ziggler defeated Alex Riley in a dark match. Dolph did have Vicky with him, and Dolph walked out. People started booing a little bit, but the second Vicky walked out behind him, the heat kicked in. So maybe separating Vicky and Dolph is not the greatest idea at the moment, because Dolph doesn't seem to be able to get a good reaction without her. But
yeah, I think that's pretty telling about, you know, the way his character is going, because, you know, he's been kind of treading water here for quite a while. And, you know, there was that suggestion and demand, you know, kind of building up both on the forum and other websites for him to kind of break free and take control of that, you know, his character and his future on his own. But I don't think the crowds are buying into it right now. And I think it might be just because of how much, you know, Vicky has control over the crowd. I mean, you know, you take a huge step back when you go from having somebody like Vicky Guerrero, who, for whatever reason, has been able to turn, you know, her entire career around to become a heat monster. And, you know, putting her in a situation with Dolph works, but they're going to have to find a way to separate them, you know, without turning Dolph full babyface, because I don't think, you know, he's ever been successful in that role. So he's in a precarious situation right now for a guy that's been on the ball for, you know, behind the eight ball for at least a year or more.
Yeah, it just seems like, I mean, and it seems this way with a group of the upper mid-carders, really, that there's Dolph, there's Kofi, there's Morrison, where it's like WWE is like, well, we can put them in the occasional main event and we can use them a little bit, but when it comes to giving them the full-on superstar push, they always pull back right before they do it. And it makes you go, well, what's wrong? What, is WWE stupid? Or do they just see something that we don't that's wrong? And it could just be reactions like this, where we watch TV and we go, Dolph and Vicky need to break up, but they see arena reactions like this all over the country and go, no, man, no. Dolph breaks up with Vicky and his heat's gone. And this was evidence of that. But the match itself was pretty decent. Riley got a okay pop for being the first babyface out, but then the crowd was not into Riley at all. There were no Riley or anything chants for him, which this was a chantable crowd for most of the night, so that was surprising. And unless it was the Barrett-Bryan match that the crowd just died during. But, yeah, so the match was decent, probably 3-4 minutes, and Dolph won. Okay match to kind of wake the crowd up and test out the production equipment and make sure everything's going to work well and they don't end up with an embarrassing situation like at last year's SummerSlam, where the big screen went out 2 minutes into the show. So then we got the national anthem being played by the Tool guitarist, whose name I can't recall right now, but that was pretty cool. And, you know, the big SummerSlam video and pyro display, along with the inflatable awesome being brought onto the stage. I know a lot of people find this silly, but I love the inflatable awesome more than a person should. Do you have any thoughts on the inflatable awesome?
Yeah, I think it's a fun little gimmick. I think they ruined it, though, because the camera panned over to the entrance briefly, and you saw them setting up the awesome kind of balloons, and then, you know, a second later, you know, the Miz's music hit, and Cole tried to act his best, like, you know, he was excited that he didn't know the Miz was going to be there, but everybody had saw the balloons get dragged out there on television, so it kind of ruined that surprise. But, you know, I actually like when he uses it, because it kind of gives whatever he's doing that kind of big match feel.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's a silly little thing that Miz does, because, I don't know, I feel like Miz is just the kind of character who would have an inflatable awesome made. Just, you know.
Yeah.
And it was as the show started that the commentary earpiece started kicking in, and WWE last night rolled out for the first time ever an earpiece for people live in the arena. You pay $15. Yeah, that's a little bit steep, but you put it on your ear, and for the whole show, you get commentary. And for me, a lot of times, I mean, I love going to wrestling shows, and it's always fun, but sometimes you settle into a longer match, and it doesn't necessarily get boring, but it's hard to stay engaged with everything that's going on. And the commentary earpiece definitely helps with that. I mean, it's a cool gimmick. I think 15 is a little steep for them, especially when you think, you know, you're trying to get families to come to your WWE events, and a family of four is going to have to pay $60 to listen to the commentary. They're just not going to do it. So, I mean, especially for a pay-per-view, I think it's a good idea. But the bad idea of this was Jim Ross had tweeted earlier in the day that he'd be on commentary. So I was psyched. I'm like, cool, I'm going to see the show, and I'm not going to miss out on that brilliant Jim Ross call of Cena Punk. It's going to be awesome. Well, I hear, you know, I'm in the arena, and they start introducing the commentators. Whose music do I hear hitting first? Booker T's. So they replaced Jim Ross with Booker T. They benched the best commentator of all time for what I believe is in the running to be the worst. Booker T with such gems as, this match is technical, but it's a little too technical for me. I mean, what were they thinking? Whose idea was it that Booker T needed to be the guy to call this show? I don't like Booker T. You can look back. I wrote a blog about Booker T's guide to half-ass commentary a little while back on the site. I mean, the guy is dreadful. He shows no signs of improvement. And now, this is my theory, Jake. Jim Ross showed up. He did his prep work on the show. He had a little notebook ready to go, notes set up. And they said, wait, you actually prepared for the show? We don't let commentators do that anymore. You're on a 30-day wellness suspension. That's my guess.
That's as good a theory as any, I guess. I mean, from what I understand, JR tweeted that, you know, that Booker was sent out there for some more SmackDown representation. And, you know, he was going to do the live tweeting for the show, which, you know, as asinine as it sounded, I think it actually did give fans a little something to look forward to, because JR's tweets were a hell of a lot better than what we got out of the booth last night for the most part. I was kind of hoping that maybe they'd cross the streams or something, and you'd get to hear whatever Vince was yelling into the announced people's ears through your headset. But that doesn't sound like that happened. That could have saved it. That could have made it worth the $15 or $20 or whatever it cost.
That would have been the most brilliant thing in history. But if you are going to I think they're only doing them for Raw shows and for pay-per-views. But if you are going to one in the future and you have the extra money and you're wondering, is it worth it? I definitely think it is. I think it'll be less worth it for a TV show because there's a lot more talk on a TV show. But for a pay-per-view, it's nice to hear the call of the action. It lets you in a little bit more on the story of the match and kind of what the guys are doing in the ring, because the commentators, when they decide to be on point, will echo that. And, I mean, it allowed for a little, you know, bit more fun. There weren't a ton of people wearing them in the arena, and it wasn't, I mean, it was a little weird at first, but it wasn't difficult to cheer with one on, which my worry was that a lot of people would get them and everyone would pay attention to the earpiece and not, you know, not be cheering and actively involved in the matches. And I didn't see much of that happening, which was good. And I mean, they're a fun little gimmick, and you get them once and you can use them next time WWE comes to town. So I don't want to sound like too much of a commercial for them. And there were downsides, like the sound quality on them is a little bit poor. Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole sound a little bit alike somehow. I'm not even sure how. And the obvious big downside was Booker T was in my ear for the entire show. I can't dig that, sucka.
Yeah, no. Booker was at his repetitive and irritating worst last night. There wasn't a whole lot to say other than the guy is just running on fumes out there. And I don't know if he's getting fed lines or if that's actually him trying to articulate what he's actually thinking. But whatever it is, it feels more like a rib than somebody who's actually trying to take the product seriously.
I did, however, cheer every time he said the words Fave Five.
If that was a drinking game, I think you would have had a lot of alcohol poisoning related hospital trips.
Seriously. Speaking of Fave Five, I want to give a quick plug to the .NET Countdown, exclusively available for .NET members, where Jake and I go over our Fave Five moments of the week. Yeah, that's a that's me just working in a little bit more there. But so our first match of the night, or to start off the night, we had The Miz come out, and he cut a pretty generic promo about being on SummerSlam. And then we had R-Truth come out. I just got a huge kick out of this one. Truth said, SummerSlam starts with an S, so do spiders, and CeeLo Green is performing, and C starts, and conspiracy starts with C. And then before he could go on to tell us what this grand conspiracy was, we had Alberto Del Rio come out, and the man, the myth, the legend, Ricardo Rodriguez introduced him. And then we had Kofi, John Morrison, and Rey Mysterio all come out, and this match was Kofi, John Morrison, and Mysterio defeating Miz, Del Rio, and Truth in a six-man tag in 9 minutes and 40 seconds. And the finish of this match came when Mysterio hit basically all of his trademark offense. Kingston and Morrison took out everyone at ringside with some dives, and he and Mysterio got the win by pinning R-Truth. This match, one thing I noticed, Morrison's rumored to be at about 25% with his shoulder. Mysterio, you know, he has knee surgery pretty much coming up, and they're saying, you know, he's going to be lucky to make it through Raw tonight. So you had Kofi in there doing most of the heavy lifting and the work for his team as far as selling and everything goes. But they tagged Mysterio in, and that dude, he didn't look like he was missing a step.
No, not at all. I was actually very surprised to see him moving around as well as he did. I mean, Jason had posted to the site that, you know, he's, whether it's sooner or later, the guy's going to need a knee replacement. And, you know, as somebody who's had family members go through knee replacements before, that is a brutal and grueling recovery. And I'm not even sure, you know, if that is something that he'll be able to come back from. But I don't know the extent of Morrison's injury. I didn't hear the 25% number, but, you know, judging on how much time he spent in the match, that's probably accurate. But, you know, for the most part, this match was pretty well-paced. I mean, everybody kind of got to work in at least one pretty decent spot. You know, it was a decent opener for the show. And, you know, Mysterio, despite what looked like a pretty heavy knee brace, was able to move around pretty good and execute all of his signature spots. So, you know, I think it worked out pretty well for everybody.
And in a moment of commentary genius, Booker T said, "You can tell this is a big event because R-Truth has been to the wig shop." And that led to about a minute and a half of Booker T, Jerry Lawler, and Michael Cole talking about their haircuts. Only in WWE, folks. And then backstage, we saw John Laurinaitis talking with CM Punk, and he said he wants an apology. He was demanding it, and then so CM Punk gave him a condescending apology. I was disappointed. I tried to start a Johnny Ace chant. I mean, this man who changed the business is one half of the Dynamic Dudes. You'd think we could get a thank you Johnny Ace or just a Johnny Ace going in the arena. Apparently, I'm the only one who had that thought.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the guy is pretty robotic, and the Dynamic Dudes are pretty far into the past. I mean, maybe if you were rocking your Dude's T-shirt, you might have gotten something going, but, you know, the Ace is, like Paul said, he's the Marty Funkhauser of the WWE, just robotic and repetitive and boring, and, you know, Punk managed to save that segment with his condescending apology, but, you know, if they ever send Johnny Ace out there to cut a promo by himself, you know, you better have your caffeine pills handy, because you're going down.
I just think the thing about Ace, and last night, the thing that got me with him, I mean, if they play him up as just a funny guy who thinks he's better than he is, I can deal with him being on TV. Because then he is kind of a throwback to the Stooges, and I can see how it works. But if they make him this, you know, if they try and make him this kind of Vince McMahon-like figure, they're done. And speaking of Vince McMahon, his daughter, the billion-dollar princess, Stephanie McMahon, showed up and talked to Punk right after this. And this is where things got a little bit intriguing for the night. Stephanie was seen in a series of backstage vignettes where she was talking to the participants in the main event. And does this signal the return of Stephanie McMahon as an on-air character, Jake?
You know, I think it's definitely possible. You know, there were there were, you know, rumors of the second coming of the McMahon-Helmsley era kind of situation, you know, bantered around both the forum and by Jason. So, I mean, it's not out of the question, but, you know, I hope what we're seeing, you know, is somebody, whether it's Stephanie or somebody else, kind of playing, you know, acting out either her dad's or Vince's interests on TV to kind of keep the company under his finger. So, you know, that's what immediately what I thought is that, you know, perhaps Stephanie is either acting in some kind of relationship with Triple H or maybe even acting against him if they wanted to do something a little bit more interesting. So I hope it's the return because she's actually not too bad in talking segments, and I think she could add a lot to the show.
Yeah, I think she can add a lot as long as I hope she is doing something a little bit different. I mean, if anything, I hope she's doing something a little more grown up, the same way her run as SmackDown GM was, where she's not playing the billion-dollar princess. But if we do get the return of the McMahon-Helmsley era, do you think we're going to get those sweet screens on either side of the Titantron with their pictures on them again? Because those things were pretty badass.
I mean, I think you can only hope for that. I mean, that was always the highlight of my week.
Yeah, exactly. Like, end of 99, beginning of 2000, I looked forward to seeing Triple H and Stephanie on the side of the Titantron for the entire freaking show.
Well, it would definitely give everybody on the show somebody to hate, and, you know, universally hated figures, you know, generally do well on wrestling shows, you know, when you can get, you know, strange bedfellows between heels and babyfaces working to conquer the greater evil. I think those make for some interesting storylines from time to time. I mean, it like with the first run of the McMahon-Helmsley era, you can push it too far, and it can go on too long, and then it just becomes awful. But, you know, just for a couple of months or, you know, maybe even, you know, a six-month angle leading up to WrestleMania, I think they could keep this interesting if they actually decided to sit down and write it out.
Exactly. And I apologize to anyone who just heard that in the background, but my cat jumped up onto the top of my window screen in an attempt to escape, and I had to lay the smack down a little bit. I'm just kidding. I just pulled her off. I did not hit an animal. Anyways, in our second match of the night, now that I've demonstrated almost animal cruelty, Mark Henry defeated Sheamus via countout in 9:25, and I feel like a lot of people are torn on this match because on the one hand, you had Sheamus looking really, I mean, Sheamus in his first big match as a babyface, he got beat up an awful lot, and I wasn't a big fan of how much of a beating Sheamus took in this match. But at the same time, what do you do? It's Mark Henry, and you're building up Mark Henry as your monster heel, so you can't have Henry get beat, and you can't really have Sheamus. I mean, and you can't have Sheamus dominate him if you want Henry to keep his heat. So I just think they were in a bit of a catch-22 here where WWE, they said, okay, well, we've got to go with Henry in this match.
Well, here's my take, and it might be different than anybody else. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised by this match. I had, you know, pretty high expectations for it going in, and I thought it met my expectations. I mean, everything in this match looked like it hurt. Both of these guys beat the crap out of each other. I mean, obviously you had Sheamus taking the brunt of the offense, but, you know, when you have a guy like Mark Henry who's been put over as a monster like that for the last couple of months, you know, sending a guy like Sheamus, who is a relatively new babyface, after him, I think it actually benefits Sheamus to take a loss here because it sets him up as a guy who has, you know, this huge brawler's heart, who, you know, who's willing to go out there and take a beating, you know, if it means he gets one more shot at taking out Mark Henry. You know, Mark Henry is huge. You know, he's easily 150 pounds heavier than Sheamus. You know, so if they're going to wrestle a power match, it would make sense that, you know, if Henry was able to get a hold of Sheamus, that he could, you know, do enough damage to put him out for a countout, and that's exactly what he did. You know, you can make the case that, well, they don't make barricades like they used to. That was obviously, you know, a setup spot to continue this feud, but I think it was, you know, a pretty good demonstration of Henry's power, and, you know, Sheamus kind of crawling back to the ring, you know, gave it enough drama and showed that, you know, Sheamus was willing to keep fighting even though he had taken that massive beating. So, you know, I think this is a good move in the long run for this feud, because it lets Henry keep his heat. It shows that, you know, Sheamus is willing to keep fighting even though he's taken a tremendous amount of damage. And, you know, come Friday, we'll probably see the continuation of this feud. And when Sheamus does, you know, come through eventually, as WWE always does with babyfaces and beat Mark Henry, it'll seem like that much bigger of a deal.
That's true, and I will say that the crowd got behind Sheamus as he took that beating. I mean, as he was getting beat down in the ring, for, you know, there were Sheamus chants. I mean, they popped okay for his music, but there were legit Sheamus chants as he got beat down. And then as he climbed back in, there was again a Sheamus chant and an ovation for him as he slowly climbed into the ring ready to fight again. So it does get him over as a babyface. It does, like you said, it probably actually does do more good for Sheamus to have to overcome something than to just say, well, the babyface went out there and beat Mark Henry.
And yeah, and it would do Henry a disservice, too. I mean, you spent all that time putting the guy over as a monster, you know, to have him get sent out there in his first pay-per-view match, you know, against a hot up-and-coming babyface and have him just get demolished clean would completely defeat the purpose of the last 2 months' worth of work. You know, and Sheamus had plenty of, you know, of capital to give up when going into that match. I mean, he didn't need a win to sustain his push as a babyface. He just needed to have a strong showing, and I think that's exactly what happened. You know, Henry was the bigger guy. He was a stronger guy, and he, you know, he managed to get Sheamus into a situation where he couldn't climb his way back into the ring. And, you know, just like in the Rocky movies, you know, eventually he's going to get a win, but a lot of people forget that, you know, Rocky being one of the greatest movies of the 20th century, he didn't win at the end of the first movie. So sometimes a loss and an emotional one at that, where you show some heart, can benefit a good guy character in the long run, and I think that's what we saw here tonight.
Exactly, and it was a really good match. The spot through the barricade was just sick. I mean, I know that it's a gimmick thing, but, and I can't think of what around the ring has not been gimmicks for Mark Henry lately. I mean, dude just keeps demolishing the place. And we'll get some more demolition a little bit later as Randy Orton overcame one of the biggest hurdles of his career last night. But, I mean, that was a great spot. And personally, I loved the touch that they just put caution tape up and two security guards there and did not bother to try and rebuild the barricade. That tickled me a little bit.
The little things count. That's for sure.
Then backstage, we saw Josh Matthews interviewing Christian, and real quick about backstage segments, one way WWE could improve the on-ear headset commentary things in the arena, pump in the backstage segments too, because when the arena first sees someone, it is impossible to hear what's going on because they're either reacting with cheers or boos or a mixture if it's Cena or Punk, and it gets very difficult. But basically, Christian hyped that he had a surprise for later and said he's like Harry Potter, a big summer blockbuster packed with action, and Randy Orton is a summer flop like Cowboys and Aliens. And, you know, I
got to work in the Hollywood references, I guess, while you're in L.A.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because everyone in that crowd works in the entertainment industry, obviously.
Well, of course.
Yeah, that's kind of funny because I do work in the entertainment industry. But, yeah, not everyone does. No one around me did, partially because the people around me were mostly seven. But then we got Justin Roberts introducing CeeLo Green, and I don't know if you listened to Jason Powell and Chris Shore's audio, Jake, but I've got to just say a direct quote from Chris Shore here because I thought it was brilliant. CeeLo Green looked like the professor of African American studies at Hogwarts.
That's a great quote for sure. Yeah, my wife said he looked like Aretha Franklin at WrestleMania 3 if she took off her weave, and I think that's pretty close too. You know? It was a very weird moo sparkly outfit, and
yeah.
I mean he's you know, I actually don't hate his music. I mean, it's not my kind of music, but that was a bizarre outfit he put on last night. And then the Divas look so out of place. It just—I don't know. They all went out there and they just looked like they were lost.
My wife turned to me and she's like, "Who are the? He has the most awkward backup dancers in history." And I was like, "Those are divas, Christy." And she goes, "Oh, wow."
Just the heartbreak set in right there. Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, they looked lost. The crowd just wasn't into this, and I mean. And there was a combination of things that happened all in a row that really kind of tore down the crowd. A count-out finish, even if it was an impressive spot, crowds just don't like count-outs.
No, especially
so
on pay-per-views. I mean, it's just not the most exciting way to close a match.
So a count-out finish with the heel going over, the CeeLo Green two-song little mini-concert, a lot of backstage stuff as they set up and tore down for CeeLo. And then we had Kelly Kelly versus Beth Phoenix, which crowds just don't get as into divas matches. I mean, it all kind of added up to really create a lull in that second hour of the pay-per-view. And that's where Daniel Bryan and, you know, Wade Barrett kind of came in. And we'll get to that when we do. But if you're wondering why the crowd died down little by little, that's why. And I've got to make a complaint right now. So, in the middle of the CeeLo Green concert, inspiration struck me and I went to grab a beer. The line was like 20 people long, and I was not going to wait through 20 people. So, Staples Center missed out on my beer money last night by not having a beer stand every 5 feet like they should.
Well, at least you were sober for the Barrett and Bryan match, which, despite how little the crowd cared about it, I thought was very good.
Yeah, no, it was a very good match. That was kind of the bummer of the crowd not caring about it, was that it was a good match. But before we get there, let's go ahead and get to Kelly Kelly beating with Eve for some ungodly reason, beating Beth Phoenix. Actually, no. I'm happy that Eve was with Kelly Kelly because Eve would have been a backup dancer had she not been with Kelly Kelly. And I never want to see Eve dance again.
Fair enough.
But she defeated Beth Phoenix with Natalya to retain the WWE Divas Championship in about 6:25, and I thought this was a really good Divas match. They told the story of Kelly Kelly being pissed off, and she played pissed off while not having to run the ropes, because God knows she can't. And Beth... really well in these roles. Beth played a heel physically, but you know, didn't really have to cheat to get ahead. And the finish was Beth basically looking dominant, going for the glam slam, and Kelly being a little bit smarter and reversing it. Classic booking, even though most people saw Beth going over. I liked what WWE did here.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed the match and the finish. I mean, I had predicted it to go the other way. I thought they were just going to send Kelly out there to get massacred and have this, Natalya and Beth thing, carry forward right away. But I don't think they lose anything by, you know, pushing it off another pay-per-view or even just another couple of weeks to try to get Beth and Natty over a little bit more before they put the title on one of them. But, you know, it worked. I mean, it was a good match. I mean, as far as Divas matches go, this is probably one of the most athletic ones that we've seen in quite a while, and I think, you know, a lot of that credit should go to Dustin Rhodes, who has been putting together the Divas matches for the last couple of weeks and has been doing a fantastic job. So, you know, kudos to him for getting a lot more out of these Divas than we had been getting with the previous road agent. But the way this worked out, I think, is not at all a bad thing. This feud will continue, obviously, into Raw. And, you know, whether we see a title change tonight or 2 weeks from now, doesn't matter. I think it's just, holding off the inevitable where, you know, Beth and Natty are going to, you know, take over the division and possibly eventually feud. So, letting the pretty Divas, hold on to the belt for a couple of weeks isn't going to hurt anybody.
Exactly. And it really makes – I mean – for fans like us that are excited to see Beth Phoenix get a run with the Divas title, it delays our gratification. And for fans who are Kelly Kelly fans, it gives them something to hang the hat on, where Kelly overcame crazy odds and you know, a better wrestler, a stronger wrestler, and she overcame and went out there and, you know, proved why she's champion, because she's a little, you know, on that night she was a little bit smarter. So, dear God, I just called Kelly smart. Then we saw a backstage shot of Stephanie McMahon leaving John Cena's locker room, and, you know, the jokes in the forum, I'm sure, started going down, and on Twitter I saw them, and, yeah, classy, real classy, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, apparently men and women can't have conversations together without sexual favors being introduced at some point. I guess that's what wrestling fans immediately go to whenever they see Stephanie, which I guess you have to give The Rock and Chris Jericho credit for labeling her all those years ago.
Dear God. Now I want to go back and watch some of those promos just because of the verbal tirades that Chris Jericho went on.
Oh, it was grand at the time. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was grand. 12-year-old me was forever influenced.
Yes.
Then backstage, we had, I think our truth was just on fire last night with the comedy, and I know he can be used for a serious character, but our truth talking to Jimmy Hart, and Jimmy Hart saying that, you know, our truth needed a manager, someone like Jimmy Hart, to take him to the heights like he has never seen, and Jimmy listed some people that he managed and left out Hulk Hogan, which I just thought was a little interesting. Since they've been mentioning Hogan so much on the air, but mostly in a negative light. And then R-Truth said, you know, think big, not little, Jimmy. Then turned to Jimmy Hart and said, little Jimmy? Are you little Jimmy? It was silly and ridiculous, but it was pretty classy. And then Ron Artest, or whatever the hell he's calling himself, just kind of stood there in the background and, you know.
Was that his daughter that was with him? I couldn't tell.
I think it was his daughter.
Gotcha.
And, you know, that was just it. They were, like, watching, which is kind of awkward if you think about it. If, you know, two guys are having a conversation and then one dude's just standing back, like, holding his daughter going, those guys are talking. All right. But, you know, Ron Artest is crazy. So what you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever known anybody who was kind of a conspiracy nut, you know, R-Truth is not that far from, you know, how people that I've known act in their everyday lives. So, you know, despite how insane he seems, it's I've known some conspiracy people that were actually pretty close to acting that way. So it's actually a pretty good representation of what I think he's going for.
And I just... It was a few seconds before R-Truth made the little Jimmy realization that I realized where they were going to go with the segment. And then I just got even more excited. I mean, I think R-Truth and Jimmy Hart played off of each other quite well. And Jimmy Hart, I mean, yeah, the dude looks older, but he looks to be doing really well.
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty good. I mean, I was like, wow, WWE's going to do managers again. But, yeah, obviously that's where they were going with little Jimmy. But I've always missed having managers at ringside, whether they're male or female doesn't really matter. But, you know, if you remember watching wrestling in your youth or especially early 80s WWF or NWA, managers were, you know, they were a lot like what Vicky Guerrero was today. They were pretty good heat magnets for their time.
And managers were everywhere. I mean, it's hard to watch. Even you watch the old WrestleManias, almost every act had a manager. It
right.
was just normal. I mean, you had Captain Lou out there, Bobby Heenan, Slick.
Yeah. And God, Bobby Heenan, obviously, you know, the best of all time. I mean,
if you're not counting
greatness.
Slick, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotta
just kidding,
Slick
folks. Save your emails. But yeah, so that segment was just a lot of fun. And then we had something that wasn't a whole lot of fun, at least for the live crowd, apparently. And I was part of the live crowd, and I understood why they died down. But it was Wade Barrett defeating Daniel Bryan in 11:50. And a few points. People I overheard talking and was talking to in the arena, they didn't know that this match was even going to happen on this card. So WWE didn't do a good job promoting it. It was never on their website. It just... people didn't know that Wade Barrett versus Daniel Bryan was happening. Barrett and Bryan didn't really play to the crowd a whole lot. I mean, you know, they did their entrances and tried to connect them, but after the entrances, it didn't, you know, most of the time you can kind of tell if you were to walk into a match and never have seen them wrestle, you can tell who's the heel and who's the babyface.
Right.
There wasn't a whole lot of that in this match. Daniel Bryan, before he did some of his high spots, really could have done well to take an extra second and acknowledge the crowd, give them a point, give them anything just to get people fired up. And Daniel Bryan failed to do that last night. And so they ended up having a great match that really was hurt because the crowd wasn't there with them to react, and they didn't make an effort in the match to bring the crowd into it. That said, it was a really good match. I mean, it wasn't better than the two main events, but it was a really good match and probably one of Bryan's best since he's been in WWE.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it was Bryan's, if not the best, you know, probably top five since he's been in WWE. And, you know, I agree that they definitely did not spend enough time acknowledging the crowd. I mean, they seemed to, you know, move well from spot to spot in the ring. But, you know, Bryan has, you know, that moveset, or at least part of it, that he's carried over from Ring of Honor. You know, a lot of those spots where he was trying to rev up the crowd involved those, you know, Ring of Honor stiff kicks to the chest and to the head. And I don't think, you know, those are the types of maneuvers that WWE fans are going to react to in a big way. I mean, you might get some reaction, and I believe, you know, the one time that he did rev up before he kicked Barrett in the head after that series of kicks to the chest, you know, the crowd kind of woke up with him when he kind of charged up in the ring. But I think that's the only time I can even recall that he even tried to do that during the match. So, you know, that coupled with the fact that they, you know, they mentioned the match in passing, you know, after Barrett attacked Bryan on SmackDown, you know, that it was going to be on the pay-per-view, you know, really didn't get people invested at all in this story heading into the show. So, you know, the lack of crowd interaction in the match and the lack of pushing of the story leading up to the show kind of, and not to mention all that crowd lull prior to the match taking place, I think it really hurt them on the show yesterday. And that was a shame because they really put on one of the, at least probably the best match of the undercard on the show before we got to the main events.
Mm-hmm. And this was a show, really, with no bad matches. I've been to some good shows in the past, but it was one of the best shows as far as in-ring action goes that I've seen. There wasn't any match that I sat there going, oh, my God. But what did you think of the booking to put Wade Barrett over Daniel Bryan, who is Mr. Money in the Bank?
I think Barrett desperately needed the win. I mean, the way he's been kind of dismantled, you know, since leaving Nexus and then going into the Core and spending a couple of months getting squashed as a part of the Core, and then the Core breakup when Ezekiel Jackson ended up beating him clean a bunch of times. I mean, the guy has really kind of been, you know, completely taken apart since he's been really, I mean, a year ago, he was main eventing SummerSlam, you know, seen as one of the direct threats to John Cena. So he's kind of fallen a long ways, and, you know, hopefully this match for both of these guys is kind of them, you know, composing themselves and getting ready to head back up the card, because I both think they have the ability to do it. You know, whether they can do that just by having a feud with each other, I guess, remains to be seen. But I am hoping that this match was just the first and what ends up being a pretty good series between them.
And with the heel winning, it does look like they can go with series on this one. And it's almost like the Sheamus-Mark Henry thing where the heel goes over the first time, so the babyface has something to fight for. And I think this can also, and I mentioned this when Daniel Bryan won Money in the Bank, and after he announced it for WrestleMania, I mentioned it again. It can be part of Daniel Bryan's quest towards the title that he has to overcome people that he originally loses to. It can be part of him trying to become a world title contender as he works his way up. So I think him losing is a good step in his story, and especially him having an even match with Wade Barrett. And like you said, Barrett needed to come out on top. And although I picked Dee Bry, my man Dee Bry, who, by the way, is at the top of Booker T's Fave 5, in case anyone is wondering, Although I picked him to win, I'm not disappointed with the Wade Barrett thing. Speaking of picks, how did your picks go, Jake?
Awful. I think I didn't even get one right tonight.
I do think that's true.
Yeah.
Not to mention, why did you even post them? I mean, they went up minutes before the pay-per-view.
It was like an hour.
I think you may have been better served to leave them down.
Oh, well. You live and you learn, I guess.
But so then we got Justin Roberts pointing out four members of the U.S. military, and I have a funny story on this one. When I went to Raw a couple months ago in Las Vegas, I was sitting near – I was up in the upper deck, and most of the upper deck was tarped off, and four U.S. servicemen came up, and they had gotten free tickets, and they were complaining about what awful seats they gave them. And they were like, we're in the Army. We showed up in uniform. And so I just found it funny that they had these servicemen sitting at ringside when the ones who rolled up to the event in Las Vegas, their free tickets were some of the worst seats in the house. So
wow, that's terrible.
Yeah, I know. I felt bad for them. But then we had Christian coming out to cut a promo and give us his big surprise, and that surprise was Edge, who got a huge ovation from the arena. Pretty entrance again. It's always been one of my favorites, and I'm a big fan of the production elements in wrestling, and Edge just has some of the best, one of the best entrances, I think, in wrestling history. So seeing that again was pretty cool, and just seeing Edge, and Edge went on to cut a promo about how proud he was of Christian for taking the brass ring and becoming champion, and then how disappointed he was in Christian for the way he has whined and cried, and then he said, you won the title again by disqualification? I did some pretty awful things in this ring, but I always like to think that I did them with a little bit of panache. So I guess Edge and Cyrano de Bergerac have a lot in common. Read the play, folks. And I enjoyed this segment. It was a nice way to get Edge out there, let Christian deliver his surprise, but not turn Christian babyface in the process, because I can tell you, had Orton come out while Edge was standing in Christian's corner, Orton's pop would have been nothing.
Yeah, I think they made the right call. I mean, at first I was like, well, they're kind of killing the suspense early by bringing Edge out right away. But, you know, the way it ended up working out, I think definitely benefited both the match and Orton, because if they had brought Edge out there to get that huge pop and then left him out there in Christian's corner, I think Orton would have suffered a lot as a result of that. So the way that first part ended up was, you know, it was a good emotional moment for Christian, because I think it'll lead to another character change for him eventually. But I think after, you know, this match tonight, they're going to have to go in a different direction with him no matter what.
Yep, and this match that you are referring to, well, actually, so Edge left, then we got Randy Orton's entrance, and Randy got a huge pop when he came out, really assisted by Edge, because Edge didn't put over Christian. He really put over that, you know, Christian was a heel, and Orton's pop was just awesome. L.A., for some reason, has always popped big for Orton. I'm remembering back to last year's SummerSlam, and the huge ovation he got the night after SummerSlam when they were still in Staples Center, when he tried to RKO Sheamus through an announce table and it didn't break. This has been going on for a long time, people. You have to understand what this table and Randy Orton thing really is. It is the rivalry of Orton's career that he overcame tonight at SummerSlam. And before we get to that, Randy Orton or Tony Schimmel handled the in-ring introductions, which I always love in a title match. And we got Randy Orton defeating Christian in a no-holds-barred match to win the World Heavyweight Championship in 23:45. What did you think of this match, Jake?
You know, I was really pleased with the action. I thought these guys put on one hell of a match. And, you know, if it wasn't the best in their series, it was damn close. These guys just have really great chemistry in the ring together. And I think we both mentioned this before. It's been kind of the surprise of the summer to watch these two go out there month after month and wrestle each other, because it doesn't seem like their matches lose any steam. I mean, they had, you know, a good 23 minutes tonight, and it all felt like it was just at about 100% speed. So I was really pleased with the match. You know, we had some really interesting spots in there. They managed to look very brutal without kind of going over that PG line that they've kind of drawn in the sand. You know, despite Orton getting some nicks from the table on the outside, they managed to stay pretty much PG throughout the whole thing, even though they worked in spots with the announce steps and kendo sticks and chairs and everything else. So, you know, it was a brutal match. It was a good finish to this feud. You know, a predictable finish, you know, given, you know, how fond they seem to be of Orton right now. But I think it is pretty much the end of this main event heel run for Christian. I don't think there's really anywhere for him to move from here except down the card for a while, you know, to kind of gain some of his credibility back before challenging for the title again. But overall, the match was very good. And, you know, the only thing I struggle with right now is figuring out where the hell they go with Randy Orton from here, because, I mean, who else is there on SmackDown right now to take him on? But just purely on match quality, this was a lot of fun to watch.
This was a lot of fun to watch, and the moment I've been talking about all night, Randy Orton RKO'd Christian, not on the table, through the Spanish announce table. It's been since 2007 that Randy Orton has been attempting to RKO people through the announce table, and the table always stays standing. It always stays up. Sometimes he goes back for number two thinking, this one can be it. Oh, God, let this one be it. And Randy Orton still cannot break the announce table. And he did it last night. I think I popped huge the second he broke the announce table. I yelled, he did it. Oh, my God, he did it. Just because I didn't expect the table to break. I don't know what they did. I hope that, you know, the Spanish announcers were holding the table up with their knees before they got on it, or, you know, maybe Michael Cole had a little pull string that pulled some bolts out of the table right before they went through.
It definitely looked a little soft, you know, compared to the normal announce table construction. I mean, if you get a chance to rewatch the pay-per-view, I got a DVR'd at home. But if you get a chance to rewatch it again, take a look at right before Orton kind of leaps to do the RKO on the announce table. You can see it kind of buckling already underneath their weight. So I don't know if there was less reinforcement than what's there usually, or if they had kind of loosened up a couple of bolts, you know, before they worked over there to that spot, or what ended up happening. But it definitely was one of those Hollywood type spots where, you know, everything shatters immediately against the laws of physics.
I don't even mind.
I don't either.
Randy Orton usually gets from tables. I mean, this table put Randy Orton over big. This feud's been building up for years, like I said, and finally Randy Orton got the table to put him over.
Yeah, it was it was good. I mean, it worked, but I guess, you know, why haven't you loosened up the bolts before? Like,
seriously,
how many times do we need to do this before we learn our lessons? But it worked tonight. It was good. Or last night.
And other notable spots that we got on the as part of this match, you had Randy Orton. I don't know why they've never done this before. His you know, opponent's feet on the ropes DDT. He did that onto a trash can, you know, onto the opening side of the trash can, and I mean, that thing just crumbled beneath Christian. It looked fantastic. I mean, we know those things are about as sturdy as an aluminum beer can with no, you know, if you cut the top off of it, but it was just a really good-looking spot.
Yeah, I think I remember him doing that spot before with either Mick Foley or RVD, but it's been years mm-hmm. and years. So it was nice to see him break out some more spots for this match, because it really helped along the stipulation and made it feel special.
Now, I have a little bit of a pet peeve to bring up, and I have to – it's a little thing, and I know it's talking about a very, very small thing, but I understand a little bit why trash cans are underneath the ring. I understand tables being underneath the ring. I get wrenches and any tool you want to put under there. I get why that's there. How the hell does a kendo stick help people set up the ring?
I don't know. I think it's one of those wrestling logic things we just have to put out of our minds. Otherwise, you'll drive yourself to madness trying to figure it out.
And I know the announcers said, you know, well, Christian knew where that kendo stick was. He must have set it here earlier in the day. That's cool. What about the other three?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Jason Powell speculated on Twitter that I brought them to the building and that I hid them under the ring. It's possible. I'm not gonna say I didn't do that, but I am gonna say my seats were very far from ringside. So if they had wrestled up to the upper deck and gotten a kendo stick, then you could blame that one on me. But the finish of this match, you know, it was the DDT onto the trash can. Christian then recovered, hit Orton with a kendo stick, and went to a jump off the second rope. And much like it played on the finish of their first match together, where Orton got him off of that diving splash and hit him with the RKO. However, this time it was onto the steel steps, and that spot just looked absolutely brutal.
Yeah, it looked brutal, but I mean, my first thought after watching it was, what exactly was Christian going for there?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I'm just going to pretend he was going for a splash onto Orton onto the steps, because I think I can justify that in my mind. But yeah, it didn't look like Christian was really trying to hurt Orton.
Yeah.
He just was jumping and then suddenly ended up in RKO position. But I mean, again, totally a nitpicky thing, because you watch it and you just go, wow, that looked good.
Oh, yeah, it looked like it hurt bad. I mean, you could see the indentation on the steps when they were done. I mean, he hit that thing with some pretty good force.
And it was amazing that Orton was able to get up there and kind of make it look like an RKO, in the sense that there wasn't a whole lot of time between Christian leaving the ropes and Christian hitting the steps. So,
yeah, Orton's definitely on his game in the ring. I mean, there's nobody can take that away from him.
Would you say that as far as in-ring work goes, that this has been the series of Orton's career?
I'm trying to think back to Orton's better series in the ring, but, you know, nothing springs to mind immediately. I mean, he had some good matches with Benoit and Triple H and Cena over the years, but this is probably the best series of matches end-to-end that I can remember from Orton in forever. These guys really have some great chemistry together.
I'd agree, and I, like we have said before, and hopefully won't say again, because they have good matches, but I think it's time to put this one to bed. Although I don't see where SmackDown goes from here. This has been the surprise of the summer. This story and this feud and these two men, I mean, even as their story has lost steam, in the ring, you're always going to get something good out of Orton and Christian. And if they wanted to return to this in a few months, I'd be fine with it, in the sense that I would be fine seeing them go back to it even in a year. But it needs to be on the shelf for a little bit. Where do you go with Orton after this?
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been pondering. I really don't know. I mean, you know, do you involve, you know, the other main event feud? Do you get Sheamus and Henry involved with Orton? I mean, do you try to elevate somebody new up to that spot? I mean, there's not a lot of credible heels left on SmackDown, and, you know, Henry is probably the most obvious choice, but it would be a shame to cut short his feud with Sheamus. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go. You know, maybe they bring somebody over from Raw, you know, like The Miz or something, to feud with him. I'm not sure, but they're going to have to do something different.
Yeah. Part of me sees Wade Barrett stepping in, but then Barrett hasn't... Barrett is definitely not built up as a main eventer. So it's hard to think of him stepping in and being that main event guy in this match. Maybe in a couple months, but SmackDown's in a situation where they need someone, and they need someone now.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I thought, you know, bringing somebody over from Raw would be the way to go. But I mean, I don't know how you work that out with trades or however they do it. I mean, they do seem to ignore the brand split when it's inconvenient. So it could be just another one of those situations. But there aren't too many main event heels on SmackDown that aren't already involved in some kind of feud. So they got to do some quick thinking. We'll see where it goes.
And then a video recapped the SummerSlam events in L.A. And this video, it featured SummerSlam Access, which I went to 2 years ago. And let me say, I've never had a worse time at a wrestling event. It was hot, and there's absolutely nothing to do. It may have improved, but unless you want to wait in really long lines to get Ezekiel Jackson's autograph, I don't think it's worth going to. But then a shot aired of Triple H talking with Stephanie McMahon backstage. They kissed and headed in different directions. And then we got the Cena, Punk, and Triple H highlight video that was the it was the one they showed on Raw with, you know, that NFL Films-like feel of the epic showdown at Money in the Bank. And just watching, you know, this video, it started to get me excited, and it started to get the arena excited. They were pumped after the Orton win, and they were quiet when Orton won the title, I think because most of them assumed he was winning the title, but they were actually excited to, you know, they were excited about that match. And then we got CM Punk against John Cena, and Punk, you know, Triple H came out to a good reaction. Punk came out to a mixed reaction of boos and cheers. A lot of John Cena fans were there last night. I would say the crowd was about 50-50, more women and kids and families into Cena and more, you know, dudes into Punk. But, you know, you go to a wrestling event and that's just kind of what you get. Like I said, Punk t-shirts everywhere. And I mean, this was another damn good match from these two. Do you agree?
Yeah, I don't, you know, everything we saw last night was up to par with what we saw at Money in the Bank. I mean, the crowd wasn't quite as hot, you know, overall for the matches, what we saw in Chicago. But I think they at least equaled what we saw, you know, in that match as far as, you know, work rate. So I was pretty pleased with it. You know, the conclusion got kind of wonky because you knew we were going to have some kind of Triple H involvement in the finish, so you know you could see that coming. But you know, that's not the fault of the wrestlers, the way the match, you know, the way the finish was booked. And I thought, you know, athletically they both delivered. There wasn't nearly as many kind of missteps or you know, botches, you know, in comparison to what we saw at Money in the Bank. And even that match was good in that regard. So you know, this was probably, if anything, a slight improvement over the match we saw at Money in the Bank. And you know, I was excited throughout the whole thing. I think they had some great near falls the last, you know, 5 to 7 minutes where they really kicked it into high gear, were extremely fun to watch. And you know, I hope it's not the last we've seen of those two in the ring, because they really seem to have found something special there. They click really well together.
And I will say, I mean, a lot of what they did with this match was, and maybe this is because I was in the crowd, what I liked about the crowd reaction last night, even when I sat back and watched and didn't chant anything, was, as opposed to a Money in the Bank where it was so pro-punk, this crowd was legit split. And you got, you know, a war going on in sections of let's go Cena, CM Punk. It just made it very fun. It was, you know, there wasn't a person in that building who was not into that match and chanting and going along with it. And that, I mean, when you can draw that kind of passion out of wrestling fans, and especially a crowd that is fairly notorious for no selling or just kind of hanging out and, you know, being on their cell phones during shows, that's some awesome passion. And it was just really neat to see them bring that out. As far as the match in the ring goes, great action. Bell to bell, just these guys, like you said, they found something special with the chemistry between Cena and Punk. And if they, I don't think they're going right back to it, but this is a feud that they can go back to, because these guys, even if, you know, somehow they end up forming a loose alliance, these guys still have such conflicting ideologies that at some point they're going to clash. And I think fans can get excited about that day. Even, you know, next time they meet, it will probably be Cena going over, and I would guess it'll be Cena going over on the way to his match with The Rock at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean that's you know, a pretty likely scenario. I mean they're gonna wanna send Cena, you know, into his WrestleMania main event with The Rock, you know, looking as strong as possible. So you know, you can definitely see where you know, Cena and Punk, if they come together again down the road, it would probably end up going in Cena's favor. But you know, I can see why you'd probably wanna keep them apart for a while. You know, if Punk's gonna be involved in another one of the main events at WrestleMania, which I think is a pretty safe bet as well. You know, sending him in there strong would be ideal, all the same. So keeping them apart for, you know, 6-8 months, or you know, at least keeping them away from having one-on-one competition is probably preferable if you want to send them both, you know, into the busy part of the WWE year. As far as business goes, from, you know, Survivor Series through WrestleMania, you know, keeping them both strong is the way to go. So my best guess would be that, you know, we see them, like you said, form some kind of loose alliance after the show last night, and trying to root out whatever is causing all that political unrest backstage, and I think that will be a fun storyline to watch, just because, you know, these guys who hate each other, who end up making these loose alliances, always makes for some pretty intriguing television.
Yep, and now let's go through what happened at the end of this match kind of piece by piece. First, you had the way the match ended, CM Punk hit the go to sleep, rolled up Cena for the pin, and Cena's foot was on the ropes. Triple H still counted three. It looked at the end of the match like John Cena was arguing, and I was kind of, like a lot of fans, I think, waiting for a restart, because it reminded me of SummerSlam 2009, where the Orton-Sheamus or the Orton-Cena match kept getting restarted because things would happen, and then they'd say, well, we're going to restart the match, and finally Orton came out on top, and just a really crazy overbooked finish. And also it reminded me of Shawn Michaels and Vader at SummerSlam 96, which originally used that gimmick. But we didn't get the good old-fashioned SummerSlam restart. Instead, we just got Punk winning and celebrating. So the announcers started saying, we're going off the air. So what did you think of it up to this point?
Well, I mean, obviously the finish was, you know, contrived a bit. I mean, you had Triple H missing an obvious foot on the ropes to give Punk the pinfall. And, you know, then Cena walks away disgusted, you know, with the whole thing, after kind of telling Triple H what he missed, and Triple H kind of begged off and said, I just didn't see it. And so, you know, I was as surprised as anybody that we didn't get a restart, because it was one of those moments where, you know, it seemed like it was taking too long to get to whatever the next step was. So I fully expected there to be some kind of restart or something to get a real conclusion to the match. But what ended up happening was fun as well, so we can get down to that, I guess.
And then we got, you know, Cena went backstage, Punk celebrated at ringside, went back into the ring, and Hunter went to shake his hand, and Punk refused, and then Hunter raised Punk's hand. So right there, I think a lot of fans were going, is he going to pedigree him? I think he's going to pedigree him. Is the pedigree coming? Pedigree. Pedigree, pedigree. You know, like, I really think that that's where people's minds were going at that point, and it didn't happen. And Hunter kind of left the ring. And then Big Daddy Cool Diesel Kevin Nash jumps over the barricade, goes into the ring, power bombs Punk, leaves him laying, runs out through the crowd and out, and then out of Staples Center. So, I mean, did you see the Del Rio cash-in coming at this point?
I mean, as soon as Punk got laid out, I could kind of see, okay, this is kind of where they're going. But, I mean, the camera barely, you know, slid away from Kevin Nash leaving the arena, and you saw Del Rio walking out on the stage with his briefcase. So it was, you know, it was neat. I mean, you kind of got the impression that right away that you know, Del Rio might have brought Nash in for the assist, mm-hmm. But then, you know, Triple H kind of had this kind of confused, kind of patsy look on his face So, you know, then your mind kind of wonders, well, I wonder, you know, how much he had to do with this. And then, you know, the Stephanie wrinkle into the whole show kind of played its way out. So I, you know, I was definitely pleased with the way it all happened, just because there were so, you know, many possibilities leaving, leading up to the cash in. You know, how exactly did this happen? But you know, once Nash cleared the ring, you know, it definitely felt like one of those moments where, okay, this is where the guy with the briefcase comes out and takes the belt and walks away. So yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like the right time for me.
Yeah, I guess I didn't. I even made a special note in my predictions that I didn't think Del Rio was cashing in. So I'm a little disappointed in myself for that one. But then again, I assumed he wasn't, because I didn't see Triple H turning at all, which he didn't. I also just did not see a Kevin Nash run-in happening. I mean, no one in the world could have predicted Kevin Nash. But then, as we talked about at the top of the show, we had Del Rio running down with a referee and a briefcase, hitting the standing enziguri on Punk, and your new world champion, or WWE champion, is Alberto Del Rio. There's so many possibilities going forward, and just so much that WWE can do with this. I'm excited about it. I think it's a nice way to transition from Cena versus Punk into getting them into other feuds while they still can have issues with each other.
Yep, I mean, the whole thing works. I mean, from start to finish, the way that whole post-match kind of worked out, I mean, they have a lot of places to go. You know, they have, I guess we're going to have Del Rio and Mysterio tonight. And I'm sure there will be, you know, outside involvement in that match as well. And we have Cena and Punk and Triple H and Stephanie and Nash, and where the heck do they all fit into this now, and what are we going to do with them going forward? Because they all have, you know, at least Cena and Punk both have legitimate claims at a rematch. So, you know, we have a lot of things to kind of factor in to see where this is going to go. And I hope that they take it slow enough so that, you know, the next pay-per-view main event doesn't feel, you know, even more overbooked than this one kind of felt at first, before you really put some thought into it. You know, from this point forward, I think Del Rio has to be the man. He has to be the focus, and they have to, you know, let Cena and Punk do their thing away from the belt for at least a couple of months, so that they can, you know, they can let Del Rio at least have this moment, because all the other Money in the Bank competitors that have cashed in have kind of quickly faded away from the title scene. So it would be nice for them to do right by Del Rio in this instance, and let guys who don't need the belt, you know, be entertaining away from it for a period.
I'd agree, and it will be nice. It would be nice to see Del Rio get built up as a legitimate competitor. What do you think? I mean, we're going to get Del Rio and Mysterio, and if this is Rey's last match for a little while, if he is going for, you know, maybe not his knee replacement, but another knee surgery to get him through another few years of his career, really, to most likely at that point get him to the end of his career where he wants to end it, where do you see Del Rio going at Night of Champions?
You know, it's a good question, because it really depends on, you know, what Mysterio's condition is. You know, they have other heels on Raw that could definitely use a spotlight. You know, do we get two, you know, completely new people in a title match at SummerSlam? You know, Del Rio being a first-time champion in his first defense, maybe against some, you know, he's been feuding with Kofi for a few months. Do we see Kofi kind of break through and get into a main event match? I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go, but what I would like to see is, you know, a fresh babyface come from, you know, somewhere down the card and get a match at Night of Champions against the world champion. Even if, you know, the new babyface doesn't have to go over, but just to give somebody new a taste of the main event would be cool in my book.
I would like to see that, but then you have to worry. I mean, it is Night of Champions, and, well, if they go with the gimmick of Night of Champions this year where every title's defended, then you have the worry of, well, how do you fit your John Cena, your CM Punk, and your other guys, you know, your other upper mid, you know, your other, not upper mid-carders, your other main eventers on Raw into the story. And, I mean, that's, I think, why we get a lot of four-way matches and, you know, six-man matches and things at Night of Champions. So
I think last year at Night of Champions, though, I mean, they had all the titles defended, but they also had grudge matches on the card, too, because I thought Mysterio and Punk had started their feud at Night of Champions last year. I'll have to look it up, but I know
it
that they tried
to... It wasn't Night of Champions. Punk fought Big Show last year at Night of Champions in a non-title match.
That was it. Okay. I thought it was Mysterio. But, yeah, I mean, not everything ends up being for a title, but they... I mean, you're right. They do run into the situation where they have a lot of people that could potentially be left in the dust if they go with the new guy in the title match.
But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm excited to watch Raw tonight, much like I said on our All Access show after Money in the Bank. I'm excited about where wrestling is right now. I think WWE left us with a lot of questions, a lot to ponder, and they have 5 weeks now to get to Night of Champions, and it seems like there's a lot that they have to play out in the next 5 weeks to keep TV interesting.
Yeah, that's for sure, and it's nice to have that longer break between pay-per-views because it allows, you know, the closing of any hanging storylines and potential to start something new. So I look forward to see how this power struggle works its way out, you know, leading into the next pay-per-view and how the matches get formed around that, you know, whether, you know, we start to see Triple H's power get challenged by outsiders or, you know, whether he ends up switching
nice
characters
use of outsiders.
Himself. What's that?
Nice use of the word outsiders.
Thanks. you know, and, you know, whether or not, you know, he is able to reassert himself by bringing in his own backup or aligning with, you know, the Cena or Punk or whoever he might, you know, pull into his sphere of influence to take on people who are trying to come after him. You know, there's a ton of possibilities with these power struggle storylines and, you know, alliances and backstabbing and, you know, everything that comes along with it. You know, it's kind of like palace intrigue in a way, and you know, a lot of movies and books have been based on that alone. So it'll be fun to see where this goes, and the more I think about the conclusion to the pay-per-view, the more, you know, it really sets up the rest of the year for WWE. And I think they can get a lot of interesting television out of it.
Did Kevin Nash make the biggest jump in the history of wrestling? From going from wrestling around 3 or 4 in the morning on a JCW pay-per-view or iPay-per-view on Saturday morning to wrestling to playing a big part in the main finish at SummerSlam. Sunday night.
Yeah, that must have been a wild weekend for him. I mean, it was that, you know, that gathering JCW Legends and Icons show, you know, would have been it's basically all the people you remember from, you know, 1989 to 1998 or something like that. And you know, then he jumps into that main event picture at SummerSlam, but you know, that appearance at Royal Rumble last year, you could tell that there was a ton of interest in Diesel and Kevin Nash if he could, you know, if he could keep himself in shape and come back looking strong. And he did that last night. So, you know, even though it seems kind of strange to have a guy who was wrestling at the Juggalo Gathering end up on SummerSlam, I don't think he looked out of place at all.
And I think when it does come time for Kevin Nash to get into the ring, he's going to look, you know, he's not going to look embarrassing in his wrestling tights. He's going to look like Kevin Nash.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the only thing that you could really criticize him for is it's obvious that he had to dye his goatee black for the show, and it was not the same color as the rest of his hair, so it looked kind of funny, but I'm sure they'll have that corrected for Raw tonight if he makes another appearance.
On Raw tonight, do you see it being a similar finish where Kevin Nash maybe runs in after the finish or plays into the finish of Mysterio and Del Rio just by... You know, maybe he does prove he's with Del Rio and he comes out and power bombs Mysterio, or do you see Kevin Nash actually speaking on Raw tonight?
You know, I would be really surprised to see him speak, but I would not be surprised if he got involved in the finish of the main event. I mean, if he is, you know, the enforcer character for Del Rio, I mean, you know, he has that history with Rey Mysterio where he kind of threw him like a lawn dart into a tractor trailer. So if they need to do an injury and go with Mysterio, I mean, who's better than somebody like Kevin Nash to come out there and throw him around a little bit? So, yeah, that'd be fun to watch. I could get behind that idea.
As could I. It actually could be a lot of fun to watch Kevin Nash beat up Rey Mysterio.
Yep.
That sounds weird. Anyways, on that note, I'll leave you with more plugs for the .NET member site. Again, tons of interviews, first-run news, access to the members forum, and our .NET audio shows. Basically, there's just a slew of fun things on the .NET member site. Right now, you can check it out for just $5 for your first month. We don't offer sales that often, so this is a pretty big deal. Or if you take the annual option, you can lock in that $5 a month rate for an entire year. And again, this is probably the only shot you'll get this year to do that. So I strongly suggest you do. And, you know, I don't believe you will be disappointed with the content on the .NET member site. So on that note, Jake, anything else to add about SummerSlam or the .NET sale?
No, I think you covered everything. You know, keep in mind that you know, the sale is a short-term thing, and it's the best value we've offered all year. It's you know, it was basically the same as the introductory rate from when Jason started the site a few years ago. And if you keep an eye on your wallet, you know that everything in the world has seen price increases over the last couple of years. So getting .NET for its introductory rate is a heck of a deal, and we hope you take advantage of it.
There it is. And on that note, thank you for joining me today. And this is Will Pruitt for ProWrestling.net signing off.